I've watched two organizations do exactly the same thing with us. The same assessment or resiliency diagnosis, the same framework that we've built for them, the same or similar recommendations. One of them built a resilience capability that leadership now leads on. The other has a very expensive set of materials that they don't use. The difference wasn't the work, it was the leader. I'm Brian Strauser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath, and this is the Managing Uncertainty Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk about leadership. And I know I've talked about this topic in a number of different ways, but I want to frame it in this way. Most conversations we have on this podcast and that when we talk about resilience programs and presentations that you go to and conferences that you attend and conversations that you're in, most of these conversations about resilience obsess over the technical stuff. What standard are we following? What platform or software do we use? How many plans do you have? Now, all those things matter to some extent, but none of it really saves you if no one at the top owns the program and if you don't have effective leadership. Today, the four things that strong leaders do for resilience are what I want to talk about. The four things that strong resilience leaders do that weak sponsors and leaders never do, and why each of these is a point of failure. This is a short and practical episode. If you are a resilience leader, then this is your checklist. If you report to the resilience leader, then this is how you diagnose whether or not you're set up to win or set up to fail. So my first point is that strong leaders align the program to what the business needs. Weak leaders treat resilience as a compliance obligation. Strong leaders will think about resilience as a business capability, and that decision to think of it in that way changes everything that is downstream of that decision. When the program is aligned correctly, the program is scoped to the products, the customers, the revenue that matters most to your organization, not to whatever was on the last audit. Now, audits are important. We want to deal with those. But the strategy for your program needs to align to your products, to your customers, to the revenue that matter most to your organization. How can we see this in an easy way? Well, I ask resilience leaders, what are you protecting in your organization and why? A strong one is going to answer this in business terms: revenue, reputation management, customer trust, a regulatory license that we have to operate. A weak one will say, we have 41 plans. 41 plans. The difference between aligning to the business and running a compliance function. The old view is that resilience is a requirement that we have to satisfy, or that success is having plans. The new view is that resilience is a capability that protects what earns us money. Success is faster and we can make clearer decisions under pressure because we have built this resilience capability. Number two, strong leaders clear the obstacles in the path of the program. Every resilience program and every leader is going to hit organizational resistance. The leader's job is to move that out of the way so that you can move forward. And that is work that only the leader can really do. Now, the obstacles in companies are almost always political, not technical. A business unit that won't participate. Two functions that won't share ownership. IT and the continuity team planning in separate lanes and never aligning or practicing or exercising together. What a strong leader does is they use their authority to convene the people who won't convene themselves. They make participation not optional, and they settle the ownership fights that the team can't settle lower in the organization. In these cases, it is influence, not control, that is the superpower. The leader doesn't, they're not doing the work. They're making it possible for the work to happen by getting these obstacles out of the way. The failure is when the sponsor stays passive. The program will stall at exactly the seams that it was supposed to fix. The consultant or the BC manager can't make a VP show up. Only your leader or your sponsor can do so. So a concrete example of this, I've had a client that went nowhere for months because they couldn't get organizational approval to move forward on their strategic plan. And we had departments that were starting to step in and do resilience work because it wasn't happening. All of this was resolved when a new leader came in, because they sat everyone down, set up governance, and started driving forward. Nothing about the underlying methodology changed. The obstacle got cleared because there was a leader who was willing to tackle the problem that was in the way. The third point is that strong leaders will fund the program in an honest way. You can tell what a leader actually believes by where they spend money. Resilience programs don't fail because of a lack of framework or you're not up on the latest trend. They fail from a lack of resources that match the ambition or the needs that you have in front of you for the program. Your leadership, regardless of what they're telling you, want a mature, tested enterprise capability. They're not going to just staff it with one overloaded person and no time carved out from the business to participate, unless that's what they've been told that they need, or that the leaders don't have credibility to get that buy-in. And resources, of course, are not just money. It's time. It's executive attention. It's the political air cover that you need to pull a business unit into an exercise. Strong leaders right-size the commitment to the goal, or they honestly will shrink the goal to fit the staffing and the resources you're going to be able to obtain. Both of these courses are fine, but pretending that you can't get the outcome without the investment is not. An underfunded program is worse than having no program, because it creates the illusion that you're ready. That illusion is what then gets exposed at the worst possible moment, which is when you are hit with your critical moment, the thing that you fear. My fourth point is that strong leaders stay engaged past the kickoff. The most dangerous time, the most dangerous moment for a resilience program is 3 months after that exciting kickoff meeting, when leadership attention has moved on to the next corporate problem. Resilience is not and cannot be just one and done. It is a posture, not a one-time project. Programs decay if you don't have sustained ownership. So what engagement looks like after launch, the leader shows up to the exercise, asks about the program in staff meetings, reviews the maturity, progress, and goals, and treats the after-action findings as decisions that need to be made, not as a report that needs to be filed away. Does the program get talked about when there isn't a crisis? That's the tell. If resilience only comes up during the incident, then it's already too late. The failure here are programs that were sponsored on paper but abandoned in practice. The team keeps working, but the organization stops caring and maturity will flatline. So the through line here is alignment to the business, clearing obstacles from the path, honest funding, and sustained engagement. None of these are technical issues. All of these are leadership. This is good news, though, because it means that you don't necessarily need a bigger budget or a better tool to fix a struggling program. You need a leader that can do all four of these things. And that is a fixable problem. Again, resilience is not something you buy. It is something that a leader decides to own and take on that program ownership in an accountable manner, moving it forward through your organization. The best framework in the world can't sponsor itself. So if your resilience program is stuck, don't start by asking what's wrong with the plan. Start by asking who owns it. And that's usually where you're going to find the answer. You can learn more about our thoughts on resilience programs and leadership on our website at brightpath.com/insights. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back next week with another new episode. Be well.